House by Christopher Lee, starring Julian Glover as Charles Bannister and Peter Kelly as Dougal Baxter.
Steady. Not exactly a Gainsborough, but careful.
Yeah. Let's stick it here while we shift this sofa thing. There's room to swing a cat in this place.
That'll do. Now, give me a hand to get this one down.
Steady now, girl. Oh, hey, mind yourself. Oh. Well, hello, Mr. Baxter.
What else going on, Arthur? Don't tell me the chief whip's selling off the national treasures.
We're having a bit of a swap around.
Yeah. Woman's instinct, sir, to have a bit of a move around. Leave well alone's my motto.
Anyway, I'd hardly call this a treasure. Jigsaw puzzle ships, as far as I can see. Not very good, neither.
It's been there as long as I can remember. Mm. Where's it going?
I ain't sure yet. Well, this other one came in this morning, so we thought, or rather Rosie thought, we'd do a bit of hanging, so to speak.
Mr. Bannister wants it in here. I reckon this is about the only place to put it. So, the Battle of the Nile has to find somewhere else to hang.
Ah, this is the famous portrait. Let's see now. Aye, I can see the similarity. The old judge was certainly a stern-looking chappie. You can see where Mr. Bannister gets his distinguished looks. Anyway, where is the son of the famous father? I expected to see him at lunch.
We're not sure. Something about his knee, according to the private secretary.
I thought he was at Oxford at the weekend. One of those Ditchley conferences.
He won't be long. The Monday Whips meeting's at 2:30. He never misses.
Did you mention I was looking for him?
I couldn't. He's travelling.
Just imagine him with the old black cap on.
What about the car phone?
The Willie's just thinking about him, that would.
He's in Mrs. Bannister's motor. She and Polly had to pick him up from Ditchley Park. Mr. McMurdo says he can't drive. Crutches, he said.
Are you sure? This is most inconvenient. Most inconvenient.
Here, listen to this.
I just don't know how you can do that. I feel quite sick just reading the fuel gauge. Stupid taxis. Sorry. Anything on the box tonight?
Well, should we get that far through the day, I imagine there is.
It's the car, not her, isn't it? Anyway, stick to your paper and don't look.
Well, I never. Number 10's appointed a new yes man.
A spokesman? Stay green, stay green. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Don't change. What's happened to old gig lamps, then?
No. A so-called advisor. Someone called...
Brilliant. What timing? Morning, Winston.
Who?
Ignore her. She's on first-name terms with all the statues in London. Who?
Someone called Marcel Weston, whoever he is. Heard of him?
No. Should I? Shall I go straight in?
Yes, right round. It says here that he was at the LSE and the Centre for Policy Analysis in London and is the distinguished visiting professor of penal reform at Harvard University.
They probably need one. Here we are. All in one piece. You're going to manage with that stick.
It's very him.
I should think so. Thanks. But the question is, do we need one? Or rather, does number 10? Ah, Charles. There you are.
Indeed, Dougal.
Indeed.
You got my message. I've been looking for you.
So touching. Afraid not. I've just this moment arrived.
I'm told you weren't at prayers this morning, is that right?
That is, but no doubt I'll be getting a full briefing, without the benefit of the liturgical drama, of course.
Penal reform. Well, that's my department. I don't need some blown-away academic to tell me what to do.
My understanding is that it's not you who's getting one. It's the bombardier.
You should have heard my PUS this morning.
No, thank you.
Did I know who was behind this appointment? Was it at my recommendation? Of course I didn't know. Of course it wasn't.
Presumably your POS is a little put out.
Presumably. A little, huh? It is a slur on the department. His department, as far as he's concerned.
Permanent secretaries do tend to be possessive.
First thing this morning, the bloody man pounced in like some supercilious head waiter, which is about all he is. Wanted to know if I was satisfied that the PM had full confidence in the department. In other words, me.
I see.
Well, there's more than I do. I was relying on you, Charles, to fill me in after prayers.
What does the private office tell you on people?
Stuff all. And now the bombardier's off to Welsh Wales, and I can't get a word until tomorrow. It's not good enough.
So you keep saying. Actually, I'm inclined to agree. I've got my whips in 10 minutes. I'll see if they have anything. Meanwhile, I suggest your people keep plugging at the private office.
My PPS is sniffing around now. But I refuse to look silly in front of my own people, you know.
Indeed, I do.
Spare them my authority. These are difficult enough times. I wish you'd been there, Charles. I really do.
Well, I'm sorry, old man, but as you see, I ran, or rather fell, into a little difficulty.
What? Oh, the steak. Yes, of course. But let me know if you hear anything. I'm relying on you, you know.
Yes, of course, Dougal. Yes, of course you are.
Hello there, Chang. Ah. Very elegant. It suits you.
Hello, you. I'm glad something does. How are you? Sorry about yesterday. I hope your father wasn't annoyed.
What happened? It looked painful.
Blasted knee. The conference finished in the morning and I was coming downstairs and, well, apparently according to the hospital, there's many a slip between the bottom step and the hall.
Don't worry about it. He was fine. He said that even as an undergraduate, you were always late.
Look, can we talk later? I'm, well, a little adrift.
Oh, never mind. The rock buns were stale anyway and the tea bags will keep. Perhaps another time.
You weren't bad on any questions, you know. First time, wasn't it?
Thank you, kind sir.
Seriously, we could do with a few more like you. It's all to do with image nowadays. Marketing, PR. Oh, pass the sugar, will you? It's dishonest, but that's the name of the game.
Don't tell me you've sold out to the image makers. I seem to remember, last time I heard you on any questions you gave them, hell.
Not really. But they always hope I will. That's why they ask me. Well, they used to ask me. They like a good punch-up gives them ratings. But it rarely happens. It's all thoughtful stuff now. They want the thinking people on.
So the great Dennis Wigton's a dinosaur. Almost extinct.
Going that way. You won't find many like me round this place in 10 years from now. The flat hat's finished as a passport. Now it's the mortarboard.
A degree doesn't guarantee political capability. It certainly has nothing to do with integrity.
I wonder where you got that from. No, don't get me wrong.
I'm
all for it. To my mind, it's like paying your dues. State gives you a good education, so why not come here and use it to put things right?
Wigton, idealism isn't dead then.
This is the age of specialists, not gut feelers. Specialists are worshipped. Look at this new chap they got at number 10.
Marcel Weston. He knows his stuff.
You would have to know him, wouldn't you? Me, I hadn't heard of him till this morning.
I've met him a few times and read a couple of his monographs.
You mean pamphlets? That's what we always had, pamphlets. Monograph's American, isn't it? So, how well do you know him?
Reasonably.
What's that supposed to mean?
Whatever reasonably normally means, nosy.
So, I got close, did I? Well, I never. Gee, you're a dark one, aren't you, Jules?
Bit low, if you ask me. Anyone sits on that sofa will bang their head on it. Oh, could have it on that wall.
I'll take it over to number 12. Doesn't matter. I'll leave it to you. I usually do. Oh!
You sure you're okay?
Absolutely, and I don't fuss. And thanks. What on earth would I do without you?
According to that Mr. Mossman, plenty. You heard his latest. Arthur was telling him.
When doesn't he? Oh,
there wasn't enough room to swing his ginger Tom in these offices, and Mr. Gerald Almighty Mossman says the quickest way to save space is to give me the elbow.
Don't take any notice. I run this office with the private secretary, not some wet-behind-the-ears PPS.
Yeah, well, Mr. McMurdo's not exactly secretary of the fan club, is he? Me being over here means there's three of us in that broom cupboard of his instead of two. I'm an anomaly.
Oh, come on.
Not civil service. We both know private secretaries don't like anomalies.
Talking of which, anything at prayers about the new advisor? Did the deputy mention it?
Not to me. But according to Arthur, Mr. Mossman was talking to him about getting a couple of days for a prisons debate.
Mossman did? Ouch! Oh, blast, blast, blast! And blast that man. Parliamentary time's nothing to do with him.
Arthur Hawkins may be a pillock on his good days, but he's not known as the Good Shepherd for nothing. He made sure that I heard about it 2 minutes after he did.
You must understand, Charles, Gerald's an enthusiast.
So was Che Guevara. I will not have him discussing private business with my messenger. It's not on. And another thing, I will not have him making remarks about the suitability of my personal secretary.
I can't stop the man having personal opinions.
Anyway, has he come up with anything yet?
Shortly, I expect. He was lunching in the Harcourt room. Those who knew were there.
Very smart. But then, as I'm finding out, he's something of an Harcourt habitué. Peanuts, green cocktails and strong-fingered harpists. I think Polly's expression would be naff.
You mustn't let your personal feelings into this, Charles.
I'm more concerned with Polly's personal feelings. They are seeing rather a great deal of each other.
He never mentions that.
If he was serious rather than ambitious, he would.
Then there's nothing to worry about. But as I say, don't let it get in the way. That's your personal problem. This business of Weston is far more important.
To you?
Of course. And it should be to you. Charles, I've mentioned this before. Some of us are concerned that you're losing your grip. Don't.
That's vaguely insulting, even from you.
No, it isn't. We've known each other too long for it to be. Don't forget, I know about insults. Weston's an insult. Instead of arguing about a miserable PPS, we should be deciding how to stop this nonsense before it goes any further.
It has no further to go, old man. The Prime Minister has the right to appoint anyone as advisor on a temporary or permanent basis.
In theory, of course.
Come on, don't be naive. In practice, of course your PUS is put out. He wants to know what you're going to do about it. The Army call it leadership, Dougal. We call it politics.
Very clever, Charles. Then what do you suggest?
You could resign.
You're out of your mind.
There are ways of starting rumours that you're so angry you're considering it.
That's very risky. Do you think the Bombardier would back down?
Do you?
Who knows?
We both do. It's extremely unlikely.
I prefer to keep empty promises for elections. If I threaten to go and the Bombardier ignores me, then I'd have to resign. And what precisely would I get out of that?
There is precedent, Dougal, and in somewhat similar circumstances.
Mr. Speaker, we on this side of the House welcome what he has to say on a commission of inquiry. But it raises a difficult question in my mind, and, Mr. Speaker...
Come on, you little baggage, out with it.
I am sure in the minds of the public. Does not this morning's news that the Prime Minister has appointed a personal advisor on this very subject of penal reform suggest that the Home Secretary hasn't any ideas of his own? Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, would he tell the House if he has read the latest monograph written by this unelected member of the Cabinet? Exactly what contribution he expects Professor Weston to make to his department.
Mr. Speaker, I have already told the House I have today established the terms of reference for the Commission of Inquiry into Prison Reform in the light of recent events.
Order! The Home Secretary! Order! The Home Secretary must be allowed to answer! Mr. Secretary,
that's it! A copy, Mr. Speaker, of those terms of reference has been placed in the library for all Right Honourable and Honourable Members to see. At the appropriate time, I will make a further statement. This, Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Member opposite well knows, is not the time.
What's their tongues?
Or their stomachs, more like it.
Mr. Speaker, will the Home Secretary tell the House if the Prime Minister consulted him before Professor Weston's appointment? And if the answer is no, does this mean that his department, like the Treasury and Foreign Office, is now being run from Downing Street?
You know, you could be onto a good thing, Jules. Could make a bit of a name for yourself.
I only said I know Marcel.
Which is not a bad start. Any road, you must know him pretty well, compared with anyone on our side.
First names doesn't mean anything more than that.
I wasn't suggesting anything. But with your background, you being a sociologist by trade, you know about prisons, you know what he's on about.
That doesn't make me an expert.
Look, Jules, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. You've read this bloke's stuff. You talk the same language. You can guess what he's telling them.
Not true. Well, not quite, anyway, but I suppose I do know where he's coming from.
Which is more than any of us do. Anyway, look what happened in there. You had Dougal flaming Baxter dribbling and choking. Of course he hadn't been consulted. We all knew that. But you were the one who put him on the spot.
Not really. The front bench started it.
Ah, but they did what they always do. They tried to be too clever. You heard them. You said... Did you know the bloke was getting the job? And he more or less said, no, I didn't. Wham! Stuffed.
Maybe. But, quite frankly, Marcel Weston's not going to do me any favours. We're hardly on the same side.
How long have you known him?
He was teaching at the LSE when I was trying to decide what to do. So, 10 years? He convinced me it was worth doing a PhD.
And you still see him?
Well...
Oh, sorry. Sorry, not prying, honest.
Yes, you are.
Well, if you know him that well, professionally-like...
You can stir up all sorts of clag. I can just imagine you stuffing them at PMQs.
It's hardly the first time Number 10's brought in someone over a minister's head.
And that little Mossman's already greasing his way round the lobby, dropping hints that Baxter could get nasty and embarrass the Prime Minister.
I don't think he's the type. He hasn't got the guts. Anyway, he'd need people behind him to get very far with that one.
He's got Charlie Bannister behind him. Mind you, why he bothers, I don't know. Bannister's a pretty straight bloke.
They're old friends. They were in the same house at school, and Baxter's his daughter's godfather.
Oh, yeah? Where did you pick that up?
I'm not sure. I suppose I must have read it somewhere.
I suppose you might have done.
Well, why shouldn't I?
No reason. Just a word of advice from an old Aunt Jules. That's the sort of stuff you keep to yourself.
What do you mean by that?
Tongues in this place wag like fly lizards.
Listen, Dennis, I can look after my own life. I really can. I know you mean well, but I'm not a kid, and I'm not daft.
There wasn't a hint of support, Charles. Not one of the toads got up to say anything. That wouldn't have been the case in the past.
I thought you told me your PPS had a number of our people.
Well, you're the chief whip.
You expect me to dig you out when your own method doesn't work, is that it?
Of course. You're our adjutant. I have a department to run as well as producing party pieces for this place. You have nothing else to do but make sure this end of it's as easy as possible.
Well, thank you for your frankness, old man.
I'm your friend, Charles. You know that.
I knew there was a simple explanation. Oh, by the way, did your PPS find out anything at his expensive reception?
Of course. I wouldn't have encouraged him if I hadn't thought it worthwhile.
I see.
Gerald tells me the Bombardier's private secretary is behind the whole affair.
Then it's set in concrete.
There was someone from one of the think tanks in the Harcourt room today. According to this person...
Who was?
Later, Charles, later. According to this person, the private secretary read an article by this Western chappie, passed it on to the Bombardier with the recommendation that he should be signed up immediately.
This isn't the first time. The private secretary really does have too much power, you know.
Don't worry. Gerald has come up with something, or rather somebody. Later this evening, I think I'll have a surprise for you, Charles.
You're too... Oh, kind.
I hope that leg of yours doesn't mean you'll not be back for the vote. It would be very inconvenient, you understand.
Certainly. You can't tell me now?
Won't. Better to make sure. Then perhaps a glass in your room? Immediately after the division?
I dread to think what your father will say.
Well, they're good friends, aren't they?
Friendships rarely stretch to extended slipper space and one more for the bathroom.
He's really grumpy lately. At that middle age, I'm going to do it all now and then join exit.
There's a lot on his mind, and his stupid knee hasn't helped.
I suppose you mean me.
Actually, I didn't. I was thinking far more about the house. The pressure's really on. I remember Grandpa saying that the chief whip's job was to make sure the Prime Minister could choose the time of the next election and no one else.
Tough. Grandpa never got ratty.
Grandpa was happy sitting on the back benches.
Do I have to wait till next year for that money he left me?
As far as I know. Why?
Just wondered.
Come on. You're like your little Henry. You never just wonder.
I was thinking about a flat, that's all.
Where are you now? It wasn't exactly a fortune.
I don't need one, just a flat.
Flats cost fortunes, anything decent, that is.
Or maybe I don't want a decent one. And what about you and Daddy? You could put something in.
Really?
Other people do.
Hello, anyone at home?
Polly, we are not other people. Anyway, look, forget it for the moment. I don't think this is the right time to bring this up.
Well, that's the problem with this place. There's never a right time for anything I'm interested in, is there?
Gosh, you two look glum. What's the problem?
Usual thing, darling. Polly and I are talking.
Oh, dear. I think I've had enough problems for one day, if you don't mind.
Still hurt as much?
I seem to have been on it all day. What I really fancy is a quiet drink and bed.
Well, the drink we can fix, but I'm afraid we have a visitor.
Oh, no. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Carl will be back at 9:45. There's a division.
Must you?
Don't be silly, darling.
I'll go. That's probably him.
Oh, no, not that ghastly man. That's all I need.
I don't think call me Gerald's on her list tonight, darling. More like Henry.
Thanks. Your brother? What does he want at this time of the evening?
Oh, my God.
Oh, Polly, my dear. What a beautiful princess.
He's had an accident. What are you talking about?
Leave the door. The cabby's bringing my bag.
Bag? Mary, what's going on?
Just a minute. Nothing's going on, as you call it. Look, I'm sorry. I haven't had a chance to tell you. You'd left when I phoned. Apparently, his ceiling fell in. Like that. It's perfectly true.
You've gone mad.
No, but I thought you might. Henry's bedroom ceiling fell in. Henry was in bed at the time. And apparently was rather nastily cut.
What? Stitches and things?
Bad enough for hospital. X-rays and jabs and things. Anyway, when I spoke to him, he was about to put up at his club. I said he had to come here.
I see.
Good. Oh, dear.
My godfather, James. Henry, what on earth have you been doing?
My dears, you cannot begin to imagine the unspeakable horror. There was absolutely no warning. An almighty crash sounds so much more gruesome in the dark, you know.
If you don't mind me saying so, your face looks ghastly with all that bandaging. Surely you should be in hospital.
I mind not in the least, but surely I should not. They succeeded in breaking my nerve.
They've shown in the menu that you can't order quail's eggs in St. Thomas's, can you?
Well, I'm sure you were in good hands, even if it was only one night.
They do things with foul-tasting thermometers. They have perfected the most embarrassing ways of washing one beneath the bedclothes. No. I could walk, dear heart. I did so.
You poor old thing. Your head bandage and my stick will probably get us front row seats at the next cenotaph.
Come on, Bobby. I'm exhausted by senses of sympathy. Let's get supper. Boiled fish and milk pudding, be all right?
Let's not forget the stewed thermometers.
I must say, the sight of the chief whip huddling behind the limp suggests trying times in the people's palace of democracies.
Sympathy voting has never caught the parliamentary imagination. You know, in a strange sort of way, my tumble was fortuitous. Well, perhaps.
There's always an element of perhaps in fortune.
Old Cameron.
A whiskey?
Oh, seriously. What you didn't know was that I'd arranged to see him for tea after Ditchley on Sunday. If I hadn't done this, well, I would have.
Injudicious. Tea with a traitor is not an essential event in the day of a cabinet minister, even if he was your tutor at Oxford.
He's hardly in a big league.
To my mind, dear boy, and I seem to remember yours, treachery has no degree.
Anyway, I thought I might mention it.
Tell me, when did you decide to make your visit of nostalgia?
When I saw I was down for the Ditchley conference. Seemed a good idea to stop over.
How was this? A good idea communicated? Letter? The telephone system?
No, through Jules. Juliet Cameron, his daughter, you know.
Yeah, of course. Of course. How foolish of me.
What was?
To forget. After all things, if it had been telephone or Royal Mail Service, I might have been expected to know the answer.
Just didn't look right, hanging there. Too big. Arthur's fixed for it to go over to number 12. He says it's all handy for your next job.
Number 10? There may be a connecting door between us and that place, but I hardly think they're open for us, Rose. Not even sure I'd want them to.
Don't blame you. Arthur would, but he fancies a nice little number over there. Anyway, I'm off. There's a fresh bottle of Glenmorangie on the tray. Truth. News does travel fast. Night.
Ah, there you are, Charles. See you tomorrow. Still so Dougal, as ever.
Whiskey, I take it your appearance means it's in order.
Let me. A Glenmorangie. Only the best and only right. The hospitality tray has its value at this time of night.
We pay for our whiskey in here, Dougal. All of it.
Quite right, too. I've been thinking of having a similar rule in my own department.
Naturally. Thank you. Cheerio.
Cheers.
Well, it worked. It took a little thinking through, but it worked.
We have turned, or we're about to turn, this whole business to our advantage.
By that you mean your advantage?
Of course.
And?
And in some small way, Charles, I have you to thank.
I am overwhelmed.
Guess who gave Gerald the information about Weston?
Go on. Tell me. Who?
Kay. Kay Bennett.
Kay Bennett. You
remember when we had that little bother last year?
And you threatened to give her little black book boyfriends to the gossip columns.
She was threatening to tell Rose about us.
Dougal, do we have to go through this?
Not at all, I'm just telling you. You remember she was working at the Centre for Policy Analysis, or whatever they call themselves?
Something to do with law and order, wasn't it?
Well, she and this Marcel Weston chappie got to know each other.
I really think I do see.
We keep in touch, you know.
Yes.
So when Gerald came back, it was obvious. I mean, it was his idea, but it needed my,
guiding hand?
And if Number 10 can hire an outside advisor, why shouldn't I?
Miss Bennett is joining your department.
On a temporary basis, of course.
To give you and your staff advice on something on which you are supposed to be an expert?
Officially, yes, but not really.
Dougal, for the umpteenth time, is this wise?
You see, she and Weston still see each other. There's nothing in it, of course. She's been working in Brussels, you know.
So handy for your cottage in France.
You know, do you?
This sounds very, very risky to me. Is there anything else?
Well, of course. This is where you come in.
Ah, wait a minute.
Don't worry, it's what you said. Weston's got the hots for Kay. He tells her almost everything he's doing, tries to impress. She'll tell me.
This was your idea, and she's going along with it.
Of course.
My godfather, James, there are some things I really prefer not to know. I'm afraid it's all too cynical for me.
Not cynical, Charles. It's just as you said. The army call it leadership, we call it politics.
Not mine, not mine. It's late. I must be off. Help yourself.
Gerald will be along in a moment, so I will if you don't mind.
You can talk freely. The room's not bugged.
Oh, by the way, Charles, glad to see you move that picture of your father. Strange eyes, staring straight at you. Most off-putting, you know. Night.
In that episode of The House, you heard Julian Glover as Charles Bannister, Peter Kelly as Dougal Baxter, Isla Blair as Mary Bannister, Christopher Benjamin as Henry Colville, Siobhan Redmond as Juliet Cameron, David Ryle as Dennis Wigton, Sheila Reed as Rose, James Garbutt as Arthur, Ruth Gemmell as Polly Bannister, and Terence Edmund as the Speaker. The House was written by Christopher Lee and produced by Neil Cargill.